Blog Talk Radio.
Golden dreaming beauty man, is it only fantasy? Sometimes one can't help but wonder, will it ever truly be? Some people keep on saying, all is illusion and lies. Why is it so hard to believe there are better days to see? So it seems like the world is tumbling down. It's the darkest time of night. Right before dawn, here comes the time.
Blessings and greetings and blessings, blessed souls. We're alive with the Most High's blessings because we're staying alive in Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachamim, instructions of mercies. You're now tuned into blogtalkradio.com. We consider to be the higher frequency within blogtalkradio.com. We call ourselves Soul Class. Today's presentation is Soul Class 521, In Search of Ancient Authentic Torah. Program presentation number 124. We haven't had such a specific type of program since this past July of 2015. Anyway, with that being said, blessed is our Creator. Shalom, peace, and bracha. Blessing upon the human family experience. Creator's help. Our next broadcast is going on right now on October 21st, 2015, corresponding to the eighth day of Mar Cheshvan, 5,776 years ago. Since original man and original woman, common ancestors partnered to begin the human family with the blessings of the Eternal Creator. The program now is the program time is 10:02 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA, unifying souls actually. The presentation today will be a variety of Torah/Biblical teachings ranging from the Book of Genesis, Chapter 6, Verse 22, Proverbs chapter 3, verse 22, teaching from Rambam, Breslov/Chabad Hasidus, a brief discussion concerning the seven Noahic commandments in addition to whatever can occur. When living human beings, each one blessed with a divine image, get on to verbally scrimmage with each other, every person a brother or sister, albeit from another mother. Our call in number is 347-838-8669. That's 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones. I'm going to carry on with the program, but to lower the music of Blessed... Whoa, that was fun and abrupt. Blessed soul and prayer partner, Rev. Isaac Patone. This is Here Comes the Time from the Generation Redemption album. And we're going to turn down the music. I just want to remind everyone, you can catch Rev. Isaac and the Beit Mazel Shul engaging in sincere Jewish Moroccan-style liturgical prayers every Shabbat, starting at 10 a.m. this coming Shabbat, located at 1433 President Street, located between Albany Avenue and Kingston Avenue in the Crown Heights section of Brooklyn. I also feel it's my obligation, blessed souls, to make mention of a tremendous event, which hopefully will be a big Kiddush Hashem, a sanctification of the holy name of the Creator, one that I hope to participate at, being led by Rav Yaakov David Cohen. November 9th, the summit at the UN headquarters, United for Peace. This event will take place between 4 and 7 p.m., located in New York, New York. And the address is 777 United Nations Plaza, you can enter at the 44th Street and 1st Avenue entranceway. And the topic of discussion will be harnessing cultural and religious ethics to promote the UN United Nations Post 2015 Developmental Goals, integrating ethics and faith-based teachings as a means of spreading to the masses of human beings, all blessed and anointed with a divine image all around the world. And just to let you know, I actually spoke briefly with Rabbi Yaakov Rogalsky, who was the co-author of The Path of the Rights of Gentiles, with Rabbi Chaim Klorfin, who recently co-published a book, or co-wrote a book with Rabbi David Katz, called The World of the Ger. Hopefully we'll be reading a brief piece from The World of the Ger later on in this program, with time permitting. At this particular point, I want to bring in my co-host, Rambam teacher, student, disseminator, of the teachings of Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon, the Nesher HaGadol, the Great Eagle, Maimonides, by Moshe Ben Maimon, Dennis Ryan. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Don, and life is good.
I'm glad to hear you say that, Dennis, and may your exhortation, your assertion, penetrate into the hearts of all our blessed listeners. And again, blessed souls, we have about 54 minutes to go, and if you do want to call in to participate, the number is 347-838-8669. So we're going to start off, as we usually do, with a letter, and I found a very nice, brief, juicy letter written by the Lubavitcher Rebbe many years ago, and which can be found in either, it's probably in Hebrew or Yiddish, from Likutei Sichos, the Gathering of Talks, from 36th volume, page 325. And the terse advice given by the Rebbe, a very powerful one, which we'll explore for a minute or two with Dennis as well. What do we do when a child enters a type of world of fantasy in their early level of development that he or she, so to speak, are isolating themselves from normal patterns of socialization with other children or even in their school environment or family environment? So the Rebbe wrote as follows. Since, as stated in the documentation, apparently the parents had sent some sort of what we would call today probably a psychosocial evaluation of the child, since the Rebbe mentioned that he saw in this evaluation of the child, which is the term is used, documentation, it's mentioned that the child is interested in music and sings frequently, etc. So the Rebbe advised, you should try to use this to reach him, to attach him more firmly to his parents, may they be blessed, and to other members who are of his family, who are significant others, or children his age, or in a school environment. And this can be accomplished, the Rebbe went on to say, by having his parents sing in his presence, telling the child that they will continue singing if he fulfills a particular task, etc., or they will obtain for him recordings of music that he favors. And then the Rebbe concluded, surely a child psychologist will be able to point out numerous methods as to how this can be accomplished. So Dennis, I take from this three-paragraph letter advising the parents what they should do in this situation. Actually, it could be that it was not the parents wrote it, but actually perhaps a facilitator for the child or the school psychologist or social worker. That the Rebbe is saying, meet the child where he is. And once it was ascertained that the child loves music, engage the child with something that takes them out of his world of fantasy. And who other than his parents would be more fit than to sing in that child's presence? And then to use it as a motivating factor to help him reorient himself, that he's more grounded in proper social interactions with his parents and siblings, in school, wherever he is in society. So we see here that, and also the Rebbe mentioned a child psychologist. So we see a fusion of doing a type of analysis into a situation which is unchecked. Because my extensive experience in the field of mental health is trying to help people with mental illness. And I don't know if this child had mental illness. Usually people are not diagnosed with mental illness until they get to a later age in life. It could be called a developmental delay, that meet the person where he or she is, go to an expert for proven methodologies of how to actualize this advice given by the Rebbe, and last but not least, that the child indicated, or was observed, that the child is interested in the music. So it's a human-centered approach to help extract out that child from his state of apparently he was isolating him himself too much and engaging in levels what is called his world of fantasy, which could be quite injurious to his future development as a properly developing human being at the level that he must develop. So any takes on these matters, Dennis?
Yes. Fantasy is easy. Reality is hard. When little kids are growing up, they tend to go in their mental condition of fantasy. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's the obligation and the responsibility of the parents to teach them reality. Reality is that what they're going to learn, and they have to understand it as explained by other people because they don't have any reference point. When it's strictly in your mind, you can bounce from one side of your mind to the other and be happy. Why? Because you're in control. But reality is another world where you're not in control, but you must learn the do's and don'ts. And that way, when the child grows up, they can make the choice as long as they know what reality is and they still have the fantasy in their mind. So those are choices that humans have to make only if they're taught what reality is at the same time without interfering with their fantasy.
True. Just one more point, Dennis, I'd like to bring up. Now, we see in the Bible itself, Joseph had dreams. Now, his brothers interpreted his dreams as he was trying to outshow them or to what we call it, I'm forgetting the term. Joseph was trying to show that there was some sort of superior virtue within him that the other 11 brothers or 10 brothers didn't have because his younger brother by the same mother, Benjamin, was not against Joseph. If we learn this story about Joseph, it was 10 brothers who sold him. So we see, too, even when a person has a fanciful type of what I've learned is called the tzirachush, a sense of pictorial imagination, one also must be wary of who to share that with. If you're going to share your visions or your, I'm not talking about prophetic, just your viewpoints, you have to be careful who you share it with and understand that people might not necessarily understand where you're coming from. So there, too, that applies to the treatment of this child. Hopefully he was treated properly, given the proper treatment program with the proper advice from a child psychologist, that he would be given the empowerment to make a differentiation with whom he could share his, so to speak, fantasies with at the proper time with the proper people in his audience, as opposed to if he kept on exuding out those fantasies to others in society, they might start to stigmatize him, label him, make fun of him, and create more trouble in his young stage of development. So I just want to add that. Anything else, Dennis, before we move on to the next section?
Yeah, we've had lots of people who had these fantasies, and we called them crazy. They later became great people, accumulated great amount of wealth, etc. Now, I'm not saying that's the way. I'm just saying when God gave us free will, he gave us a lot of power. Some people can tap into it. Some people just don't recognize it or don't want to use it. However, we don't recommend under any conditions that very young kids would have contact with a psychiatrist or a psychologist because they're just formulating everything in their head. We don't know what goes on in their head, and we have no way of tapping into it. So in a lot of cases, we have to let development take place, and then we can look at the patterns to see if any adjustments are needed. But ordinarily, humans are self-sufficient.
True. Okay, we're now going to move on to the next section of our presentation. We're going to read tersely. It's been a while since we've been covering the verses from the Torah, the Bible itself, the scripture, but we will re-immerse ourselves, hopefully right now, for the next couple of minutes. This is chapter 6, verse 22. This concerns the epic instructional story about Noah and his three blessed sons and their wives and Noah's wife and how they preserved the human family experience from 4,120 years ago. I say that with the number that I just cited, because the Jewish people have been notating these occurrences since those times, because I want to remind everyone that Abraham, who we're learning about in this week's Torah portion, actually interacted with Noah for the first 58 years of his life. And therefore, Noah got the traditions of Noah, and Noah saw his grandfather Methuselah, and Methuselah actually interacted with his father Hanoch, and Hanoch interacted with the original man, Adam, and of course his wife Eve. So when I say that, I'm also going to assert that today is the eighth day of Mar Cheshvan, and it's now Wednesday. This coming Friday, according to the lunar calendar cycle, which you call the Hebrew lunar calendar cycle, because we, the Jewish people, Hebrew, Israelite Jewish people, have adopted this as our calendar, as commanded us to the Creator, which you can learn about more in the book of Exodus, how we document our passages of time by the lunar cycle, that it will be exactly 4,120 years ago, in 2 days from now, according to the lunar calendar cycle, that Noah and his family entered the ark. But this verse here is a testimony to the righteousness of Noah, as it reads, chapter 6, verse 22, "And Noah did according to all that God had commanded him, so he did." Now, where the first instance where it says, "And Noah did," Rashi quotes, Rashi is the primary elucidator of the Oral Torah tradition, quotes from the Midrash called the Genesis Rabbah, 31:14, that this refers to the building of the ark. Now, where it says at the end of the verse, "And so he did," because remember, at the beginning of the verse, blood says, "And Noah did, according to all that God had commanded him, so he did." Why does it have to say he did twice in the same verse? So the Ramban goes on to explain the reason why that is mentioned is that not only did Noah do what the Creator did, commanded him, which is not only to build the ark, but to gather in all the animals and to gather in sufficient food to sustain the animals that were entering the boat and his family. He did not omit anything from what God had commanded him. And this is basically the trait of the very righteous souls of creation, of being with us since the dawn of creation. And even such righteous souls as Noah and say, and Adam who preceded him, they still could have made mistakes. At their level, they're considered to be transgressions. However, this is just to just benchmark for you out listening out there, blessed souls, that there is nothing superfluous to what seems to be a simple historical, and maybe you might even call it a logistical recounting of how Noah adhered to the commandment of God to build the ark and bring the animals in and bring in the food. But the point is to show that the righteous souls of creation not only do, they don't leave anything out. They are fine adherents to the details of the destruction of the Creator in order that the Creator's instructions serve as a lesson that, to the best of our ability, we should try to keep them in the fullest detail. If we don't do it to the fullest detail, of course, God has mercy upon us, but at least it leaves us with a feeling, if we didn't do everything we were supposed to do, let's try to make a better effort the next time we go and do something, which could be the next moment, for the sake of God and for the sake of our families and our friends and our community and where we work, so we can always feel motivated to always try to do something a little bit better. Dennis?
Yes, the Jewish people have been keeping track of time and human history for a long time. A lot of people think that is a waste of time to a certain extent. But the one thing that all humans need is good example. And by going back and looking what happened in history since the beginning of time and comparing ourselves to that, can we learn by better examples? Can we learn that we should be doing things a better way? There is lots of room for improvement. And the other point I'd like to make, ever since the Garden of Eden, which symbolizes purity to a certain extent because it was set up by God, the closer you get to the Garden of Eden, the better examples closer to purity you're going to get. So all of Scripture has been written down to show you what people did before us. Now, true, they didn't have the telephone, they didn't have the TV, but they were humans. And if you look at the basic human parts, functions that they did, you can compare them to what we do today. Hopefully, we will transfer the motives that they had into today. We may not accomplish it, but we have to give it a good try.
Thank you, Dennis. We're going to move on now to the Book of Proverbs, which was authored with prophetic inspiration by King Solomon, Shlomo HaMelech, and we're in chapter 3, verse 22. I just want to paint the background frame, so to speak, verbally speaking. We're in the context of King Solomon told us in chapter 3, verse 20, with the Creator's knowledge, the depths of the earth were split and the heavens dripped dew. Because as Rashi explains to us, that the entire world was created through the elements of dew and the splitting of the depths, in which the moisture, naturally occurring liquids, which we take too much for granted, known as water, would be able to penetrate into the, I can't say the actual epicenter of the earth, but very deep into the earth, to allow for the continual flow of this liquid to allow for life to be sustained. Because, of course, you know, we talk about different forms of sources of water, whether it be from heaven above or from the abyss below, but someone created that abyss. And that abyss of water, whether below or coming from the highest heavens, is alluding to the wisdom of the Creator, because the Creator's wisdom splits everything. It breaks, it shatters. It shatters misconceptions. It creates life. And therefore, King Solomon lets know, my son, meaning those who will be students to these teachings, are considered to be the sons of King Solomon, and ultimately to the sons of the Creator by following or learning about Torah instruction. These teachings, my son, let them not depart from your eyes. Guard sound wisdom and thought. And today's verse, which we want to focus on a little bit more intently, as it says in chapter 3, verse 22, in Proverbs, they shall be life for your soul and grace for your neck. What is this? They shall be life for your soul. So Rashi explains, it is a tree of life, meaning if you look at a tree is not just giving fruit above or shade from above or branches above for the birds to nest in to plant their little home environments for themselves and their families. It is something which is also nurturing from a source undetected to the human eye, where the roots dig deep into the earth to access that abyss of wisdom, that abyss of water, and also to be suckled and nurtured by the waters that come down, such as Torah. If you go into it and understand it is a godly wisdom, it shall nurture you from above. And if you dig deeper into it, that it should become unified within your own human consciousness, you'll see that the roots of the Torah can extend mightily into your own life and for those who you love and for those who eventually you can serve as a living example of what it is to be inspired by the teachings of God. And is grace for your neck. What's grace plus? And why is it connected to the neck? Grace is something which, so to speak, something a person exudes by virtue of their prayer. And by the way, excuse me, someone's doing some drilling outside of my house. So if anyone of you listening out there hear that drilling, I don't live next to a dentist office. There's restorative work taking place outside my house. I apologize for that. But grace, blessed souls, is something that you exude outwardly. Yes, you have it within yourself as well, being that you have a divine image. But to exude it because you are suckling from the tree of life, the biblical teachings, the Torah teachings, the teachings of the prophets, the teachings of Moses, the teachings of the Mosai, who distills this wisdom down to his human loudspeaker systems, to the Bali Ruach HaKodesh, those who have divine inspiration. Even to this day, we have sages living in this world who can teach you these things. People like, well, Rashi lived 900 years ago, the Rambam, we'll learn about him soon from Dennis, but it will serve as a necklace for your neck, grace for your neck, because from your neck, that is the portal towards your heart. is not just good enough, blessed souls, to have grace exuding from your intellectual inquiry and in your speech. It's something that should penetrate into the epicenter of your heart, and it's something that from there the heart pulsates out and pumps the blood which carries your blessed soul into it throughout the different parts of your body, from the tips of your toes to the fingernails on your arm, which you can lift way above your head. Grace is something that is something within us, but also it can be with the outcome of grace around your neck is that it's traveling towards your heart, and therefore people will not just be marveled by the grace of your expression, the grace of your smile, but just the very existence of you as a human being, blessed with the divine image, that you are truly graced from head to toe because you are drinking from the tree of life. Dennis?
Yes, you mentioned King Solomon. King Solomon, by human acclamation, it was a wise person. So when a wise person, let's listen carefully to the point that we try to understand what the wisdom is directing us to. Even if we can't understand, we must take little nibbles and try to digest part of it. Because when a person with wisdom speaks, they have meaning and help for all other humans.
Beautiful. And now, Dennis, and blessed souls, we're going to move on. Dennis is going to read a teaching from someone who exuded this grace, not only from his mind and from his mouth, but also with his hands and his feet, because he lived a graceful life, because he imbibed from the tree of life, none other than Nesra Godo, the great eagle, Rambam. Dennis, what would you like to share with us today?
I'm going to read from the Guide for the Perplexed, page 454 of the online version. And it basically talks about the perfection of man. And it's in a lot of closer from Deuteronomy. So this is really a down-to-earth type of thinking. And I'm going to start with the second perfection, because I read the first perfection a while back. But if anybody wants to hear it by request, send it into Don, and I'll read the first one. Anyway, here we go. The second perfection of man consists of his becoming an actual intelligent being. For example, he knows about the things in existence, all that a person perfectly developed is capable of knowing. The second perfection certainly does not include any action or good conduct, but only knowledge, which is arrived at by speculation or established by research. It is clear that the second and superior kind of perfection can only be attained when the first perfection has been acquired for a person who is suffering from great hunger, thirst, heat, or cold, cannot grasp an idea even if it communicated by others, much less can he arrive at it by his own reasoning. But when a person is in possession of the first perfection, then he may possibly acquire the second perfection. This is undoubtedly of a superior kind, and it is alone the source of eternal life. The true law, which we said is one, and besides which there is no other law, for example, the law of our teacher Moses, has for its purpose to give us the twofold perfection. It aims first at the establishment of good mutual relations among men by removing injustice and creating noblest feelings. In that way, the people in every land are enabled to stay and continue in one condition, and everyone can acquire his first perfection. Secondly, it seeks to train us in faith and to impart correct and true opinions when the intellect is sufficiently developed. Scripture is the object of all divine commandments. Quote, "And the Lord commanded us to do all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God, for our good always, that he may preserve us alive as it is today." Deuteronomy 6:24. Here the second perfection is first mentioned, is for, I just lost my place. He has a second section is the first mention because it is of greater importance, being, as we have shown, the ultimate aim of man's existence. This perfection is expressed in the phrase, for our good always, quote unquote. You know the interpretation of our sages, quote, that it may be well with thee. That's Deuteronomy again, 12:7. Namely, in the world, that is all good, and that thou mayest prolong the days. That's the same Deuteronomy. In the world that is all eternal, quote, in the same sense, I explain the words, for our good always, to mean that we may come into the world that is good and eternal, where we may live permanently, and the words, that he may preserve us alive as it is this day, quote unquote. I explain as referring to our first and temporal existence, to that of our body, which cannot be in a perfect and good condition except by our cooperation of society as it has been shown by us.
Thank you, Dennis. And again, this type of teaching, so clear, crystally clear, it really speaks for itself. I don't think there's anything I can say to embellish it or bring out a point. Rather than those of you who are listening to us live, you can always play it back. And those of you who have yet to hear it, you'll be hearing it with the help of the Most High Creator. On the archive version, you can always play it back. With that being, thank you, Dennis, for reading that. Now I'd like to turn to two brief presentations in relation to two types or viewpoints of Hasidus. I call it Breslov / Chabad Hasidus when I share the promotion of this humble effort here. And someone wrote back to me, Breslov / Chabad Hasidus, they kind of seem to be a little confused. The reason why I do that, blessed souls, is that it's really not the opposite teaching or diametrically opposed, say Breslov or Chabad. It's really all coming from the same tree, coming from the Hasidic patriarch of the last 300 years, 270 plus years, 260 plus years, the Baal Shem Tov. So it should not seem that one is in contradiction to the other. They're actually, I don't want to say they're two sides of the same coin, but they're of the same coin. They could be on the same side of the coin. They're just from different perspectives of one side of the coin. And some places where they appear to be different sides of the same coin, well, that's for the listener of such teachings to figure out how they can figure actually to be part of the same coin. Doesn't matter what part of the coin they're part of. So this is, we're now extracting from teaching number 38 from Lakuti Maharan, basically gleanings from our master, Rabbi Nachman. And it's been taught that Rabbi Yossi said, woe to mankind. They see but know not what they see. They stand but know not what they stand. What does the land stand on? The land stands on pillars, and pillars are on the water, and the waters are on the mountains, and the mountains on the wind, and the wind on the storm, and the storm on the arm of the Holy One, blessed be He. And that's not everything that I just read was the full quotation. The source for this was in the Talmudic tractate of Chagiga, Chigigah, which you can go to page 12, the second side of that Talmudic tractate. So I mean, in the elucidation of this teaching, that from those who elucidate upon the teachings of Rabbi Nachman, as part of a Talmudic discussion concerning heaven and earth, Rabbi Yossi takes up the issue of the earth's foundations, bringing proof texts in support of his teaching. Another rabbinical sage, the Marsha, asks, and if people know what they see or upon what they stand, is that reason enough to say, woe to mankind? However, Rabbi Yossi is speaking about actually what spiritually sustains the world and mankind, not just physically. As the Marsha goes on to say, the pillars that were mentioned in that brief teaching from Chagiga, the pillars are Torah, prayer, and acts of kindness. These three stand on the water, which refers to Torah, which has been likened to water. Torah stands on the mountains, which are the righteous souls of creation, the prophets, the people who have divine inspiration, the masters of kindness, the masters of prayer. The mountains that the tzaddikim, the righteous soul, stand on is the ruach, the wind, but also the spirit, which is the human soul, which has an emotional content, which has a intellectual content, and it stands on the storm, and this is the evil inclination that every human being has to come to battle with, and yet still the storm slash evil inclination stands on God, meaning God has allowed this evil inclination to manifest in the world according to supernal eternal wisdom, in order that we as human beings overcome and subdue the energy of this inclination, in order that instead of doing something evil, we can take the energy that would otherwise be used to fulfill the machinations of our evil inclination and transform, or I should say, use that energy to learn, to pray, engage in good acts of kindness, to think good thoughts. And these Torah, these pillars of Torah, prayer, and good deeds, are rooted in our learning of Torah slash Bible and observance. To observe Torah and to study it, it will assist us greatly to come to the righteous souls that exist in every generation. These righteous individuals have attained purity by confronting their evil inclination and defeating it. They hold it at bay. And this happens only because the God helps them. And because God helps anyone seeking to come closer to him to defeat the evil inclination, the reason Rabbi Yossi bemoans mankind's lack of awareness is the result that they did not take note of the immense capacity that each human being has for properly utilizing their free will in order to recognize God in everything they do. So, and this is something that Rabbi Nachman wanted us to know in the context of today's teaching. Dennis?
Yes. What happens is there's a thing called perspective that humans have. But we not only have it with our eyes, but we also have it with our mind. Sometimes our eyes will give us one image, but our mind will interpret another image. So that is why we may have in Scripture three or four people talking about the same thing, but from different perspectives. You may think that they're talking about three or four different things, but they're not. They're talking about the same thing. So if you think it's contradictory, all humans, if you change, you rotate anything 90 degrees, it's not really the same thing, unless your mind and your eyes agree on what you're looking at. So it's very easy to see that there is no reality involved here. However, you take the earth of our planet that we live on. There's a terrible disease called anthrax. Yet, anthrax exists naturally in dirt, but it's so microscopic that it doesn't affect us. But if you bring it all together on a teaspoon, you can start a plague almost.
Yeah.
Most rocks are inert, right?
Right.
They're just sitting there. Well, that's not completely true. They were made by God. There are certain rocks that if you release the energy in the rock, you create an atom bomb.
That's right.
Who would think that the power to destroy Earth lies in an inert object just sitting there, but it has energy inside of it? Now, again, there's the perspective. Is the Earth good or bad then? Well, what your eyes see and what your mind understand has to be consistent. So the whole idea is that if you want to understand the principles that are in Scripture, you must be able to turn it a little bit, look at it from the side, and say, yes, that's the thing that I believe in.
Beautiful. Thank you, Dennis. We're now turning to a teaching we had been sharing. Originally it was a pamphlet that was written, authored by the 5th Lubavitcher Rebbe. It is called The Tree of Life. It is described by the publishers of this book, which is in English, with some Hebrew in it, but you can understand it thoroughly in the English, from Sichos in English, a classic Hasidic treatise on the mystic core of spiritual vitality. With that being said, the Rebbe Rishab writes, on the basis of the above, we can understand a verse, which is written in the book of Proverbs, chapter 6, verse 23, for a mitzvah is a candle, and the Torah is light. So when we enter into discussion of trying to associate some sort of quality of that span of the day, known as the nighttime, we are talking about associating with an attribute of rulership, of kingship. In the Hebrew it's called Malchus, because the beginning of the creation started in darkness in terms of we as receivers of God's light, when the according again to the, if we understand it, according to the lunar calendar cycle, which began all the way back from the beginning of creation, that the beginning of a day is starting at night. But from that very beginning, so flows out everything that would eventually become as what we would call the morning or the day and light. So the idea of kingship, of nighttime, is referring to a type of withdrawal of light that will eventually be elicited in order that the creation itself is empowered to realize without Creator's light, we are all in darkness. And once a little bit of light is revealed in that darkness, we come to understand that while we seem to be tangible entities, living, breathing, sentient, conscious creatures, we actually come from a state of nothingness, which is referring to a state of existence with the absence of light. So to speak, our existence really lacks substantiality until we are filled with this type of godly light. Now, again, I know for many of you listening out there, whether live or eventually in the archive version, this seems to be coming way, way, way out into from spiritual or ethereal left field. But again, these are teachings which any human being can access if he or she want to, or some might not be interested. But the point is that to come to the realization that anything that we see in this world comes from its source, from when there was an absence of existence into existence, or it's also known as ex nihilo. I guess that's in, I don't know if that's in Latin. I guess, I don't know if that's in Latin or Greek, I'm not sure. But everything came from a state of nothingness. Beyond that, if we penetrate into that nothingness or that darkness, we see the Creator was there, who we cannot define as a being of light or a being of darkness, but he so willed it to be that there should be this contrast between lack of and fullness of, and therefore hopefully we can get a greater appreciation of the creation process. Excuse me. And if we can develop a greater appreciation of this creation process, then hopefully, in a peaceful and pleasant manner, we're going to treat the creation much more respectfully, which includes ourselves and others and all those people whose lives we touch and all different forms of existence like the inanimate matter, vegetative matter, animal matter, sea life matter, so on and so on. Excuse me, Dennis?
Yes. Say the word nihil.
Ex nihilo. I think Rambam mentions it in the Mor Nevochim.
Well, nihil in Latin means nothing. Ex means out of.
So out of. Okay.
That was the creation principle that most of us believe in, that the world was created by God out of nothing. So anyway, we have today we have people who are called day people and night people. I guess with technology we invented, or people converted over being night people. So they don't really see the sun, but they don't care to see the sun because they're activated, they're motivated. All humans have an energy level based on their motivation. So whether it's daytime or nighttime, you're still going to be activated and show your energy based on how you're motivated. Well, are you motivated from a human viewpoint or are you motivated from a spiritual viewpoint? The spiritual viewpoint means that God is the motivator of all spirituality, unless you can think you can invent your own. But there are some people who have egos that think that. Anyway, so it doesn't matter if it's day or night, you are going to be motivated. And normally, the day people will keep their motivations at bay or at ease until the day comes and all of a sudden they're energized. The same thing would happen to the night people. But motivation comes from within, and that sets your level of energy. If you believe that people are the center of everything, well, that's nice. You're going to have low energy. But if you think that God is the center of everything, a source that never ends and is always there, you will be energized to do more than you think you could do. Why? Because that's how we are motivated, based on who's behind us and backing us up. Humans can have other humans behind them. How far that energy will last is debatable. But when you have God behind you, motivating you, you now think that you can do more than you're capable of. So
beautiful point, then. Beautiful point. Beautiful point. Could you say that one more time, Dennis? I think it's worth repeating that when you feel God is who is motivating you, that
when you feel spiritually motivated, that emanates from God, could be a little bit or a lot, who cares? It's the source that's there. That is what you feel is backing you up, and you feel like you can go ahead and overcome any ills, bad things, mistakes, whatever. Why? Because you have spiritual motivation to move ahead, and you can overcome human problems. So therefore, your motivation is your energy level that you tap into. It's part of you, and you should use it.
Beautiful, Dennis. If we were to give a class in motivation, motivating unmotivated human beings, I would start the class off with that topic. I want to just spring off what Dennis just said, blessed souls, to remind everyone, if we allegorically understand godliness, divinity, elocus, whatever you want to call it, as a divine grid, the good news is you don't have to pay monthly bills to the Creator by connecting to this divine grid. It's even more accessible than solar, wind, or geothermal energy. It's called divine energy or godliness or divinity, whatever you want to call it. And I just thought I would get a little tangential and just, so to speak, spice up what Dennis said, that we all have access to this divine grid. With that being said, now we're going to move into the next and last portion of our program. We didn't get any callers in. That's fine. And I just want to preface with, I was sent a private message via Facebook before today's program. And this individual, whose name I shall not mention, was mentioning to me how they were jockeying between a very intense discussion between two rabbinical viewpoints about the 7 Noahide commandments. And now, since for the last couple of years, there has been a courageous, heroic, self-sacrificing effort on the parts of, it's not just these two, but because they wrote a book, I'm going to mention their names, Rabbi Chaim Klorfin and Rabbi Rav David Katz, who are promoting through citing Torah sources that the 7 Noahide commandments are not the end-all for the nations of the world. Neither is it that they must be to convert to become Jewish people. There's actually an intermediate level between the level of the Ben Noah, which is basically the physical lineage of every human being, even for the Jewish people, because we're all the direct descendants of Noah and his 3 sons and their 3 wives. And there's a level of those who eventually want to come, who did historically live in the land of Israel with the Jewish people, and were given citizen status, which is something which is a very controversial issue in the land of Israel right now. I'm not going to go into the details and the bloody politics and the blood being shed over there. Shem have mercy on everyone over there in the Middle East. But rather that there is this level called Ger or Ger Tzedek, meaning a righteous settler. It could also mean a righteous convert, but someone who didn't become a Jew. And on the other hand, there's another rabbinical perspective. It's just about the 7 Noahide commandments. But the truth is, blessed souls, it's about having a symbiotic relationship between both viewpoints. And I don't want to say in the middle or somewhere along the mix, there will be those members of the nations who will want to go ahead and go the full distance and convert and become a Jew and accept upon him or herself all the 613 commandments. I am not a promoter of that view. Rather, it has to come from within yourself as any human being who must make intelligent, well-informed, faith-based decisions on what path of life they want to choose. So I just want to mention that it pains me to hear that there's that there could be a little bit of, you know, with any movement, even when Rambam came out and after he passed on, there were tremendous points of intellectual, spiritual, emotional friction from sides of rabbis about what do we do with the teachings of Rambam? What do we do with the teachings of the Guide to the Perplexed, which into this day there's resistance to learn this book, even from rabbinical teachers. I myself, you know, I allow Dennis to read because it's something that he's interested in, and who knows how many people he's affected. It could be in the thousands from these teachings. But I just want to share something now from the book of Rabbi, and I just want to mention one more thing, which is very ironic. Rabbi David Katz was given his rabbinical ordination from Rabbi Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, who is a member of the Supreme, he's alive today, thank God. He's a member of the Supreme Rabbinical Court of Israel, so to speak, like the on matters of faith-based discussions in Israel for the Jewish people. He's part of that high court. He's not part of the Israeli secular high court system. No, we're not out to advocate that. We're pointing out that he is on the highest level of rabbinical jurisprudence in the land of Israel, and he gave Rabbi David Katz his rabbinical ordination. At the same time, too, in the other camp that just wants to promote the seven Noahic commandments, the same Rabbi Zalman Nechemia Goldberg gave his approbation for the book The Divine Code by Rabbi Moshe Wiener, which was edited by Dr. Michael Schumann. So I just want to point out that the same rabbi who gave rabbinical ordination to Rabbi Katz is the same person who gave an approbation to the book Divine Code. He did not give an approbation to the world of the Ger, whose section I'm about to read from, but I just want to show that someone who, so to speak, I'm sure can see both sides, because Rabbi Katz was already, I believe, engaging in these type of matters. And, of course, Rav Goldberg saw it was in the Divine Code, and he said this is also a proper approach. Again, it's two points, not necessarily on both sides of the coin, but on the same side of the coin. But sometimes people think their trees are the epicenter of the forest, and really each tree is part of a larger scenery. So now I want to go right into this whole section, which I'm sure is going to be very surprising to people. It's entitled Moses the Noahite. Moses the Noahite? I thought he was Moses the Levite. I thought he was Moses the Israelite. No, there was a point in Moses' life, we can say, from the Jewish law perspective, that he was a Noahite. And this is what's written in the book here. Everything the Jewish people know about conversion, they learned from the Exodus from Egypt. During that miraculous time, Israelite men were circumcised and immersed in a mikveh. That's a ritual pool of living waters. Immersion in a mikveh reveals spiritual purity for a person or an object that's in need of physical immersion into those living waters. Israelite women also immersed in a mikveh, and both men and women accept upon themselves the Torah as a doctrine of life, as King Solomon wrote in Proverbs chapter 3, verse 18. The Torah is described, quote-unquote, as a tree of life for those who grasp it. The Israelites present at Mount Sinai said, "We will do, and then we will hear," accepting the commandments unhesitatingly, unquestioningly, lovingly, because it came from the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, even before they knew what the commandments were. There is nothing that can diminish that merit, not now or ever. But Moses said of himself that he was a ger, a stranger in a strange land. He meant that he had been a Hebrew living in the land of Egypt. Moses would have been called a Hebrew in terms of his actual physical lineage, ancestral lineage. Abraham was called a Hebrew, and Moses came from the line of Abraham. Like Abraham, Moses dwelled among people not his own, which were the Egyptians. Abraham lived among the Babylonians, he lived among the Canaanites, but at Mount Sinai, Moses became a ger tzedek, a righteous Jewish convert, along with everyone else. Bearing this in mind, it is a plain and obvious fact that the Creator gave the entire Torah only to Gerim and their children. All Jews are the children of Gerim. So, meaning we are all, me of the Jewish people, are all the children of converts, and therefore we were also strangers in lands that were not ours. We were strangers to the spiritual conditions that were imposed upon us. And though, so this is the point that Rabbi Katz and Rabbi Clifford want to bring out, is that the children of Noah, which is the actual ancestral lineage of every human being, if one believes in the biblical narrative of what happened at the time of the flood, all Noahides, all children of Noah, have the potentiality, not necessarily, they don't have, no one, we're not telling you to become Jews, but we're saying you also have this idea of, you have the ability, just as the children of Noah, who became known as the children of Israel, accepted the Torah, that you can accept the Torah as a doctrine of life, it can be a tree of life for you, and according to your ability, you can lovingly and unquestioningly and unhesitatingly fulfill the commandments in the way that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob did according to your spiritual level in these days. Now, to me, for me, Dennis, that's not a controversial teaching. That's just a Torah instruction, which I don't think anyone who is promoting the idea that the nation should keep the 7 years of commandments, which are basically seven core commandments, just as like the Ten Commandments are ten core commandments, they shouldn't struggle with such ideas. What's your take on these matters?
Well, you mentioned a couple of principles and you crossed a bunch of lines here, Don. Sorry. But humans got to learn to agree to disagree.
Yep.
Very hard principle for a lot of humans to understand. I don't care what religion you're doing, do you believe in God? The name of your religion is immaterial as it relates directly to God. Now, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with being any of the labels, but we shouldn't be arguing amongst ourselves on good terms about things we all believe in, but want to see the differences that do not, I believe, register with God. But we as humans think those differences are super important because we're humans. But we're subjects of God, not subjects of human nature. We live in a reality of human nature that everything
right.
we do should be God-like oriented.
Right.
So, my personal experience is I just love the Guide to the Perplexed. Why? Very simply, there's a amount of transcendence in that work of art, I'd like to call it. That is, if you have motivation and you want to participate in anything that honors God, you can work, you can live, and you can believe in certain levels, and we all must find that level as it relates to God. Now, the Guide to the Perplexed is not a rabbinical approved text. However, I find the transcendence in that can let you allow to take on different levels that you want to relate to God with. So each person, and this becomes a very personal thing, what level do you want to live with God as you're a human? You pick it, you live it, and enjoy it, because it's not a bad thing at all. However, if you believe that you need human rules, if you believe you need human designations, if you believe human labels are far more important than what God offers, so be it. If you want to have that level of activity between you and God, fine. But I'm not saying that you're going to do anything wrong, because there's only one judge, and that's the Almighty. So therefore, we must respect him, honor him, and we have many different ways of doing it. But Maimonides has shown us that we can work on and live and understand on different levels. That is,
yes.
to me,
yes.
that is learning to agree on disagreements. Why?
Sure.
Human disagreements are minute compared to the love of God.
True. With that being said, Dennis, I'd like to thank you for coming on today's program, which I think was a very fertile, organic conversation. And you utilized one of your most valuable resources, 1 hour of your life. We should never underestimate, blessed souls, what we can accomplish in any 1 hour, any 1 minute. And even when I was in my early morning Torah study this morning, even a moment, a second, should never be undervalued. It should always be valued for what it is. It's a blessing and a privilege to be existing any one moment, because heaven forbid if the heart should stop even for a second, that can cause quite a reaction. And I don't want to say what reaction in the rest of the body. Before we sign off, I want to just remind everyone that you still have this golden opportunity to participate for free at the November 9th summit at the UN headquarters, United for Peace, from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. That's a Monday afternoon, late Monday afternoon, early Monday evening, located at 777 United Nations Plaza. You'll be entering on 41st Street and 1st Avenue. It's entitled, this gathering, Harnessing Culture and Religious Ethics to Promote the UN Post-2015 Development Goals. The UN Post-2015 Development Goals encompass ethics inherent in many cultures and religions on issues of social justice. The Institute of Noahide Code, in cooperation with the Interparliamentary Coalition for Global Ethics, invite you to participate. You can. You have to RSVP by sending an email to Rabbi Yaakov David Cohen at info@noahide.org. That's info@noahide.org. And say you'd like to come and say your name, and then you'll be able to enter, hopefully, which will be a very fertile ground of discussion among human beings, each one of us blessed and anointed with a divine image. With that being said, blessed souls, we're going to end off today, of course, with our program ending segue music by David Domo. Hope he gets back home. Help us realize that we have to internalize that we have a divine image, which will help us get in scrimmage. Our Tehillim Elokim is not a dream. And the name of the song is actually My Way Back Home by David Domo. And hopefully all this will be accomplished in the way of a Havachad, one love, Golachad, one destiny, Kolano for all of us, B'dachin and Darki Sholem, in a pleasant and peaceful way. And just remember, blessed souls, you've got to do good, even though that might generate some ambivalency and some agitation, some all sorts of feelings which are not so hotsy-totsy. But remember, Creator is the source of all goodness. He put you into this world, so therefore you can go ahead and do something good today. And do something good, and think about what you just did, which was good, and see if you do it. The next thing that you do is also good, and your day could be filled with goodness. My Way Back Home by David Domo. Take care, everyone.